CJRU, 1280 AM in Toronto.
In a world lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And good evening and welcome to the show, episode 148, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, Canada, and of course streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream. Of course, Song Talk Radio is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters all about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters, established professionals, newbies, anything in between. Together we will share tips, we will share techniques, and we will share cool things that we have found. And hopefully together we will all learn about maybe five new things on how to write songs.
At least five.
Yeah. Tonight, as always, we have the very dedicated members of Song Talk Radio's Strike Force Alpha. On my left here is Bruce Crazy Legs Herrett.
Hey, hello.
Neil, Madman Modi.
Madman itself.
He's a loose cannon. He's a loose cannon.
My face is frozen. What can I do?
And on social media, the one who won't... Her victims know her as the Condor, but of course we know her as Vanessa Virland.
And on the Condor.
And on the controls is the Irish, Eitan Reiner.
Hey, Eitan.
Eitan. And I'm Phil. During the show, don't forget we love to hear from you, so join in the conversation and send your comments and questions into Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we will share them with you, with the audience real time, or you can also send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And don't forget, you can always stop by our website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on our show and be famous just like us. And tonight is one of our theme shows, which seems to be quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
It's, of course, on Leonard Cohen.
Yes.
Because he passed away not too long ago.
Just 2 weeks ago at this point, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Which was, I mean, he certainly had a good long life.
For sure.
You know.
And a long, illustrious career.
Yeah. And actually, you know, he's working right towards the end. I mean, I'm not.
I mean, he released an album like a month ago.
Yes. Which is sold out everywhere, which I found out.
Yes.
The hard way. Actually find it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you mean online? No, that's impossible.
No.
How do you sell it online?
I think Phil was actually looking for the LP. Were you looking for the vinyl?
Yes, I was actually getting the vinyl. Not the vinyl, CD.
The actual CD. Yeah.
I actually could have done that. Well, I don't actually have a record player, so I don't.
Right.
Okay. I have lots of vinyl, but.
Well, he had a long, long career. You can't say he was taken too soon, in a way. A long career.
Yeah, when I looked at on Wikipedia, the list of his releases is really, really long. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Discography, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, discography.
12,
yeah.
13, 14. Yeah, about 14 albums.
And one just a month ago, and we're going to hear a song from that, right, Phil? Towards the end of the show.
Yeah.
And actually, he and Leonard Cohen didn't start out as a singer songwriter. He didn't do that until he was in his mid
thirties, which is
because he was a writer and a poet for many.
Well,
years.
I remember reading "Beautiful Losers" when I was in university. One of his novels, big hit in the '60s. His novel was quite audacious. It had, you know, certain kinds of scenes in it, which were pretty racy for the time.
Yeah.
And of course, he was known as a poet around the time I was going to university. So quite an interesting man. I have a Leonard Cohen story.
Okay.
Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Is it good now? So years ago, I was trying to make it as a singer-songwriter performer. And I was living in Whistler at the time. It was the mid-90s. And I got a gig because I was singing a James Taylor song. And this manager from a local hotel heard me. And he said, "Do you want to come and sing in my bar?" I'm making a big change in my bar at the hotel. So I thought, wow, my first time ever getting paid. Got $100 for the evening.
Mm.
What he didn't tell me was that it was a sports bar and he hadn't quite made the changeover yet. So I went in there having asked him, "What's your favorite song?" And he said, "Suzanne by Leonard Cohen." I would love it if you'd play Suzanne by Leonard Cohen. And I said, okay, yeah, I know that tune. So partway through my set, The manager's standing in the back. There were about three people in the bar. And I started into Sousa, and this guy gets up from the bar, gives me the finger, and says, don't play those slow songs anymore, and walked out. And I thought of Leonard tonight about that story because he would have just kept playing. And that's what I did, right? I mean, one guy is going to judge you because a lot of people have judged Leonard about his voice, right? This kind of gravelly, croaky voice. You go, oh, he's not really a singer. And I thought, just keep singing. And I lasted 5 weeks there with my folk songs. And eventually they turned off the sound on the screens so that you didn't have to hear the Grand Prix and the tennis and everything. It was great.
People don't like Leonard Cohen, you know, because of the quality of his voice. I mean, lots of other people have covered his songs.
Yes.
But I think actually, as you know, if you're somewhat serious about songwriting, and if you're listening to a show on songwriting, you're somewhat serious about the craft of songwriting, I think it's important to develop the skill of being able to hear a song
for its own sake,
apart from the performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that way, because, I mean, Beyonce can have an amazingly written song, or Justin Bieber can have an amazingly written song. It doesn't matter who's doing it. Like, a good song is a good song.
Exactly.
And I think it's so easy. And especially when you're young, you know, like if you're really into punk, you think anything that's not punk is crap. And then after a while, you realize that there's good music in all stuff. You know, there's great country tunes, there's great, but it's the quality of the songs. Yeah. And his stuff is... You know, even the stuff that's not great, I think, is still pretty
good. You get used to his voice, though, don't you find
it? I totally get used to his voice. Yeah. And
you know, I've always liked it
for myself, I didn't really start listening to Leonard Cohen until maybe about six years ago. It was actually after I joined the Songwriters Meetup and started talking to other songwriters.
Yeah.
And people were saying, oh, you should really listen to Leonard Cohen. But when I started listening to Leonard Cohen, I was like, wow, if this dude can sing...
Yeah.
Then maybe I've got a chance. Right.
And he gave you courage.
He gave me courage to actually try it myself and be like, if this guy can get away with it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I mean, you know, like it's not like he's singing off key.
No.
You know, he's perfect. That's just his voice. But the thing that's always mystified me is that songs, the early songs like Suzanne and Bird on the Wire and stuff, he's actually singing a lot higher than he does. I'm not sure when he made the switch or why he made the switch.
I think it's youth, and he had, you know, his voice eventually got deeper and deeper as he got older.
So eventually, if he was still alive, he'd eventually just go into the
subsonic. It's not like he was going through puberty. I mean, he was already in his 30s.
No, but listen to any artist. If you listen to, for example, one of my favorites, Barbara Streisand. Anyway, whether you love her or not, she's like butter. Listen to her at 21.
Yeah.
Way up there, soprano. Right,
yeah.
And most singers who have a long career, they have to redo their charts.
Maybe they don't hit the big money notes, the big high notes.
Yeah, Tony Bennett did the same thing
as often, but I think like he would stay in the same register.
No,
at least.
Not necessarily.
Mm. Well, I think he sort of found like that was. I think he found that really works for him. That kind of gravelly kind of.
I would tend to believe that.
Women like it.
He's also really, really. I mean, smart guy, not just in terms of, you know, like being an artist, but he's also a really smart businessman. I mean, he was always very, like, he wanted to write music because he wasn't making much money off
poetry,
as a poet.
Exactly.
Strangely enough, you know, because most people make, you know, the money is where, you know, is from the poets.
Yeah, but, right. Well, he in his early career, he lived off some Canada Council type grants.
Yes.
And got to live in Greece on an island, traveled around and picked up a lot of time for writing, which was really cool. He was sponsored by the Canadian government at one point to get out there and get some poetry written. And that's basically how... the only way you do it. Unfortunately, it was much later in life where he had a run-in with his manager who bilked him.
But his manager basically kind of took all his money while he was away at the Buddhist retreat.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And he came back basically to nothing.
But the happy ending there was that Simon Cowell and the gang sort of featured, what they did is they featured Hallelujah on the Britain's Got Talent. And then he had some of his famous people from, you know, Simon Cowell shows, you know, all the American Idol shows, and got that song out there. And then right after, a whole bunch of his friends, I guess, supported him, said, do a tour.
Yeah.
And we'll help. You know,
and
it was
and they
so
were
nice.
Really, really successful.
I remember the very first time I heard a Leonard Cohen song was when I was watching Shrek 2001.
Oh,
and
Shrek.
It was John Cole, I think, who did a cover of Hallelujah.
Oh, really?
In the middle of this animated film. And I was like,
oh, wow.
What a gorgeous song. I never heard the song before.
When I first heard the song was my friend Ray, when I was young, he was a professional Finn. Everything was about being Finnish with him. And And he just loved Leonard Cohen, and I had never heard him before, and I thought, wow, it was really weird. And I thought he was from Paris, because he has – I mean, he does definitely have a very kind of French
feel
to him.
He does. A Parisian feel.
And, of course, he grew up in Montreal and went to McGill. But he always had that kind of tone. But there's a lot of singers. Like, I love, Tom Waits, who's got another voice that some people hate.
Mm-hmm. Neil Young.
Yeah, Neil Young.
That's a voice that's hard to love when you first hear it.
Yeah, fair enough.
And Morrissey, I mean, I've always loved, especially I loved early Morrissey when he was kind of a bit off, as he's now he's got a bit more kind of, schmarmy. It's not quite the same.
The singer I always think of is Geddy Lee. Everyone hates his voice, but...
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people can sing, and very few artists can interpret, right? Like, so I think it's important. Like, tonight we're going to do three songs by Leonard Cohen. He's going to sing all of them. I was looking at having a cover, but then I thought, let's listen to what Leonard Cohen did with his own songs, because the phrasing, the interpretation is coming from the guy who wrote it. So it has that authenticity.
Yeah.
Whereas, you can, it's not that singers are a dime or a dozen, but good, established, long career writers of songs are more rare.
And to say what you will about Leonard Cohen's voice, you're never going to mistake a Leonard Cohen song singing his own song for
anyone else. That's true. And I've always felt that, if you can't be a good singer, be an interesting singer.
Exactly.
Because there was a point in the 80s when there was like a lot of Canadian bands, and they were, the Canadian music industry at the time was very, was a little shy. It wasn't quite as confident as it is now. And they would have singers who were fine. Mm-hmm. They weren't bad. They were good, competent singers, but they were really, really dull.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing. I mean, it's better to be interesting and bad, because, that really, like you were saying of Neil Young, how he can really just kind of grab emotion from a line. And even though he's got this, it's sounds like someone's killing a cat sometimes, but I mean, no one else can handle those lines, Harvest Moon is a heartbreaking, beautiful
song,
and he does it great. I don't think I'd want to hear anyone else. Right.
Shall we listen to a tune?
Yeah. So what's the first song we're going to do?
Well, we're going to listen to Bird on the Wire from 1969.
This is your pick, Bruce?
Yeah, this is my pick. Did you want me to mention that? Yeah. This is my pick.
This is Bruce's pick.
I picked this one because, I graduated high school in 1969.
Did you have bell bottoms?
I was the first in my family to wear bell bottoms.
Ooh, that's
awesome. And I had two older brothers, so I led the way.
Did you say something like solid and groovy?
All the time, man. Okay. So anyway, the 60s were a time of great upheaval. There were all kinds of revolutions going on. And it was very much a time where the beat poets had come into full fruition through the 60s. And Leonard Cohen was kind of in that poetic songwriter, singer-songwriter era that had just started in the late 60s. Paul Simon was involved in that, Bob Dylan.
The Beats were like the late 50s, though, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they started then, but they were certainly coming in the early 60s as well and continuing.
Oh, right. Yeah, I guess.
Like, what I'm talking about is someone whose songwriting is like a poet writing songs, and I'm thinking of Paul Simon and Dylan and Cohen. I'd say they're the triumvirate. Anyway, when this song came out, it was just so haunting, and the imagery was so haunting. You could tell this guy is a poet. So let's have a listen. Bird on a Wire by Leonard Cohen, 1969.
Take a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free, like the worm night from some old-fashioned book. I have saved all my ribbons for thee. If I have been that you can just let it go by. If I have been untrue, a beast with his horn. I have torn everyone who reached out for me. But I swear by this song and by all that I have done wrong, I will make it all up to thee. I saw a beggar leaning on his wooden cross. Must not ask for so much. And a pretty woman leaning in her darkened home, she cried to me, hey, why not ask for my way to be free.
And that was Bird on the Wire by Leonard Cohen on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. And of course, that was from his album, second album, Songs from a Room, 1969.
Yeah.
And
Did you like the strings?
Well, there was a Jew harp?
I think it's called a Jew's harp.
A Jew's harp?
Yeah, Jew's harp. It's a little thing you put in your mouth and go, bam, 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 bam.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I've seen that.
Which is weird. I always think of that as being kind of like a bluegrass kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah, it's very you know, kind of.
Well, I don't know if this is the same era, but I did read extensively about his Columbia days. Columbia Records picked him up and recorded him in New York. And the strings are very much telling about that time. Mm. If you remember Sounds of Silence, for example, mm-hmm. when Simon and Garfunkel, like, created that on guitar, basically, yeah. maybe throw a bass and a snare in, they had strings everywhere, like there's these big string sections,
oh, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was the production of the day. They wanted to fill it out and make it, more palatable to mainstream listeners.
Really, oh, yeah, that's
right?
True.
Rather than purely folk, then it became something. Anyway, interesting, as Neil was pointing out, he's got almost a tenor voice there. Like he's heading up to
and he's got some melodic leaps in here that he doesn't seem to do later on.
Well, and it's interesting because maybe he actually lowered it because when he was going to for the line, if I had been unkind, you can tell that's right at the top of his range.
He was stretching, so maybe
that's why he lowered it. But I mean, I just found it more comfortable.
But to talk about the lyrics of the song, you know, it's all similes, like, right?
It's like, I love, and then a statement.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
I'm like that, and this is what I've done. And I love the drunken and midnight choir because it's so, I really like his lyrics in the sense that, and I've tried to do this and I'm not that good at it, that they have a story, they have an image, and you get to make up what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what they're about. But drunken and midnight choir, means some guys outside a bar at 1 a.m. hanging on to each other for dear life, swaying and singing old tunes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like in some sort of choir they think they're in. But the image is a worm on a hook and a knight from an old-fashioned book.
Yeah.
But it's really a song of I'm sorry, isn't it? Like it's a saying I'm sorry because he says, if I've been unkind, I hope you can let it go by, and if I've been untrue, it wasn't you.
Yeah, all that I've done wrong,
and I'll try to make it up to you. It's like one
of
those.
An apology.
I'm a bit of a bad guy a lot, and.
Well, he was such a womanizer. Well, I mean, womanizer.
Well, careful.
I don't know if he was a womanizer, but he had lots and lots of, you know,
lots of attention.
Girlfriends. And apparently people have met him. They said that, you know, he was just – he walked into the room and there was something magnetic about him. He just
– Yeah, I had that in 69 too, but that faded very quickly.
But that was just the grass.
That was just once actually. But anyway, what do you think of the tune? What do you think of his melodic structure?
I love the melodic structure. I was really looking at the rhyme structure, actually.
Oh.
Because he, like, right at the top, it's wire, choir, free, hook, book, thee. So he doesn't actually resolve that third line rhyme until three lines later. So
it's a
he continues that, too. And he's got the, you know, and then, of course, he got the second, he got an A-B section. And then he ends it the same way he begins it, with a bird on the wire like a drunken midnight choir. I've tried in my way to be free.
Yeah, he bookends it.
He bookends it. So in some ways, it's got a kind of a, you know, a simple classic structure.
Yeah, it does.
Like that. But it's really the rhymes that kind of get me. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's nice. We got a tweet in from Sharon.
Yes.
Always lots to say when Leonard Cohen is the subject, he evokes an era we love to remember. Thanks, Sharon.
Mm.
Yeah, there's lots of people who don't like Leonard Cohen for the same reason I think you sort of find Bob Dylan a bit sort of, you know. Although I felt Leonard Cohen seems to be pretty authentic. Like he really, but I don't think he put on anything.
No, I don't get that sense that he was putting on a persona.
No.
Although I think you have to when you're a performer. You know, he is a performer.
Everyone
he's
does.
An entertainer, yeah. right? Yeah, you exaggerate your personality a little bit, right? And he certainly had that, what would you call it? The very sort of world, man of the world, very cool, very serious, very smart, kind of like a James Bond without the gun, you know, like a man of intrigue.
Oh,
you know?
And
mystery. I think that's what women liked about him. He was mysterious and enigmatic, like you don't really know what's going on with him.
Yeah.
And I can see that would have been very, very attractive.
What's interesting about the song, though, is there's not a real course. I mean, the real...
It's just an
money
thing.
Shot is the like a bird on a wire that that rhyme scheme. The B part is really almost like a little bridge. It's in terms of strength, it's not like a sing-songy thing.
Yeah, and it repeats that section. It's completely different lyrics, so it's not it's not a chorus at all. But
it's certainly
a lift break. There.
Yeah, no,
there's
it is
a great lift there.
Yeah.
It's more a folk song in that sense that it's not a pop song. Like, it's not a typical – and there were lots of pop songs in the 60s, right? But he came from a folk background. So the idea of verse.
And Leonard Cohen has done many songs where it's verse.
Yeah.
A lot of just verse songs.
Oh.
You know.
Well, the one you chose tonight, is that like that? Or it's pretty straightforward, right?
Everybody knows there is a chorus, actually, but I can't think of one right off the
– Actually, we'll find it.
Actually, the one that Phil picked, I think, is all verses.
He's
certainly now I had heard actually that he was actually already writing songs for other people when he did his when he released his first album. He was actually already writing songs for other people.
That's what I read. He wrote poems, then he started writing lyrics for other songwriters, but then other songwriters encouraged him basically to get up on stage and do it himself, just to give it that authentic voice, I guess.
Well, Judy Collins made Suzanne popular. So apparently she recorded it before he did.
Oh, really?
And then she sang it at the Newport Festival and Folk Festival. And so he kind of got a name around that song, which was my swan song of singing in bars in Whistler. Actually, that was...
Yeah.
It was the end of my career. Thanks, Leonard. But I don't know. It's not your fault, Leonard. It was just God bless you and may you rest in peace.
I find, it's interesting. His lyrics are very... They feel very, very personal, but not too specific.
No, but they're very carefully chosen words.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
it does read a lot like poetry. Like, there's nothing that's.
Oh, you mean it's not a tell-all song.
Yeah,
certainly not that.
Like I've had, a lot of people have been sending me songs, and some of the songs, they're just so personal and just to themselves. I'm just going, well, this might be great for you, but I don't think anyone else is going to be able to relate to the song, But he's able to do the personal stuff and still kind of make it sort of open. But of course, he was. I think his first book of poetry was written while he was in high school.
Oh, well.
So,
and he learned guitar at 13.
Yeah.
So he was a bit precocious.
Yeah. So, by 33, he's actually already – and he was constantly writing. So that's a lot of time to be crafting words.
And he grew up in a middle-class home in Westmount in Montreal, which is a nice neighborhood. And he was encouraged by his parents. Which is really helpful,
yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
to have that encouragement around you. To he majored in English literature like I did, so we're very close. Like
you guys are.
Yeah.
It's interesting. He actually uses the phrase "the," which I think is kind of a tough, which can be hard to pull off. You know, I've done wrong. I will make it all up to the. You know, like I'm thinking if we sort of saw this, would we sort of go, gee, you know. Because you're always saying, you know, sing like you speak.
Well, it's a bit old English. He does it at the top of the song, too. I've saved all my ribbons for thee.
Yeah.
But he's talking in knight language, remember? I'm a knight from an old-fashioned book.
Yeah, I guess that's
And I
true.
Have saved all my ribbons.
Yeah, I don't
thee,
think it necessarily seems out of place. But
I
could understand some people reading or hearing that and thinking this is kind of pretentious.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, you can pull it, if you can pull it off. And, I mean, he could pull it off.
Yeah, and I think he's done it here quite well.
You know, as you said, every word is very carefully chosen because he's, you know. But by that time, he was already a poet.
Well, and
years.
You know, on the other hand, if he said, "I will make it all up to you," then it wouldn't fit the rhyme.
That's true.
Well, it's pretty heavy imagery. I just want to point out that there's a baby in here and it's stillborn.
You know?
Like a baby stillborn. That's an audacious thing to say. Really, that's so. Powerful an image for people. It's
and
very
it could
emotional.
Be triggering for some people.
A beast with his horn. I've torn everyone who's reached out for me.
Yeah.
It's really like kind of like mea culpa. I have to look at my faults here, right? And it's very powerful language. He didn't hold back.
Yeah, for sure. Right?
This is
very
not
strong,
pop.
Yeah.
This is not light pop music for AM radio in 1969.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
But there was a hunger around that time of the late 60s. Well, I'm not shy to say that was my time in high school. There was a hunger for this because a lot of us at that age going through that revolutionary time of gay rights, women's rights, ecological rights,
civil rights,
native rights, civil rights, we didn't want bubblegum rock.
Yeah,
a lot of us
didn't.
We wanted something serious that matched the times, the Vietnam War, all these revolutions. I mean, I remember the Summer of Love, 1967. Well, it was also the summer of Detroit burning down, downtown Detroit, right? So he and Bob Dylan, in that protest range, in that something serious for young people, we want something serious.
Yeah.
He really hit, you know,
and
really was powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's amazing because this stuff is never preachy.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I think that's what I appreciate about Leonard Cohen is that there's a lot of imagery, there's a lot of interesting poetry without hitting you over the head with a message.
Yes, you know? And I don't think he has one song, "Democracy Is Coming to the USA," and that still doesn't hit you over the head.
It doesn't really hit you over the head.
Yeah,
that's
a very
cool
song. Because I was thinking about doing that one too, although that's a mid-level song.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, like his production, this actually has, well, it has that Jew's harp, which I never realized before. I'd heard the song many times before, but I'd never actually noticed that. But some of his later stuff I did find kind of got a bit overproduced. And we don't talk about production much,
but
in certain situations, I think when you have too much production, it puts distance between the singer and the listener. Because it just, you know, where I think there's nothing more intimate than just like a person with a guitar and a voice. Or
right,
a
and they
and
had
voice.
And they had records to sell. So,
yeah.
You know, probably the record label was saying, I'm not putting out a guitar and voice thing.
Yeah.
The last one we put out, that was some guy and it died, right? They said, we've got to have energy on the radio. We've got to fill it out.
Yeah.
Is your song that you've got coming up probably has a bit of a more.
Well,
the
one that I picked is from the mid 80s. So it's got a bit of that, you know.
He really got into that kind of production
stuff. And to be honest, those are the ones I actually prefer.
Because
I'm a child of the 80s. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, they certainly, and some of the ones certainly worked well, you know, with that. Like, Democracy Is Coming is, you know,
that's
a
what
bigger
I mean.
Production.
Yeah.
But, you know, Suzanne, I think, is a fairly
stripped-down
song.
Yeah, Suzanne
might
not work as a
disco. Well as just a very stripped-down song because it is very intimate.
Yeah.
Well, remember the times. Remember the famous concert where Dylan introduced the electric guitar. I think it was like
Judas.
Where was it? It was in the West Coast at,
at
a festival in San Francisco or something. Anyway,
almost
doesn't matter. But it was an outdoor concert, and his followers like, how dare you bring an electric guitar?
Oh
on stage?
You can actually hear it. You can actually. I think if you look on YouTube, there's a recording of it, and there's you can hear the people yelling and booing and calling him Judas, and you know, just going like, he's playing
great.
Electric guitar.
Yeah,
it's not
that
big a deal, but you know, it's something well worth listening to because it's you don't funny. You know, to us, it doesn't
it
seem
was
like
a time.
No, no, it's all context.
But Bruce, why don't you tell us something cool?
Well, for those of us joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. And we're streaming live on songtalk.ca/live-stream. Tonight, we're talking about the late Leonard Cohen, a great Canadian singer, songwriter, poet, novelist, and certainly a big influence on a lot of songwriters' lives. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. So tweet in your thoughts about Leonard Cohen to us tonight at Song Talk Radio, or email us at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have November 29th, Jordan Paul, December 6th, Melanie Peterson, and December 13th, Piper Hayes.
Oh.
That's a cool name, Piper Hayes.
Yes.
And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup. That's Sunday, November 27th, from 1 to 4 at the Transact
That's
Club.
This Sunday.
Yes, this Sunday.
It is this Sunday.
It
wow,
is.
It happened so fast, and I've got, I've got a new song.
Yeah,
it's free to join on Meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details. Over
yes.
to you, Phil.
Thank you. So here is a list of awards and nominations received by Leonard Cohen. In 1964, the Quebec Literary Competition Prize for the favorite game. In 1968, the Governor General's Award for English Language Poetry or Drama for Selected Poems. In 1970, honorary degree from Dalhousie University. In 84, the Golden Rose, the main award for International Television Festival. 1985, the Canadian Authors Association Literary Award for Poetry. 1986, the Genie Award. 1988, Columbia Records Crystal Globe Award from CBS for I'm Your Man. 1989, nominated for a Juno Award. 1991, Officer of the Order of Canada, which means that he actually gets 1.5 on all Canadian Tire money. Most people don't know that.
That is amazing.
That's great. So if you got like 35 cents, you know, you got like almost 50 cents.
Don't make fun of the order. It's a good order.
91, Introduction to Another Canadian Juno Awards. Lots of Juno Awards.
Did he win them or get nominated?
93, Juno Award for the Male Vocalist of the Year.
Oh, wow.
For Closing Times. Closing Times, a great song.
Yeah,
93, Governor General's Performing Arts Award. Oh, it
goes on and on.
Yeah, you should go on. it goes on.
Where is that? Is that Wikipedia?
It's on Wikipedia. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
So we can send our viewers.
Actually, I heard I'm Your Man on Netflix. And there's a brand new Netflix movie called The Fundamentals of Caring.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a brand new movie, and they played the Leonard Cohen version of I'm Your Man.
That is cool.
It was great.
Was it a good movie?
Yeah, it was a great movie, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's a pretty astounding person, and there's something very Canadian about his success, because it's not like he's not like Canadian
he was never
West
excessive.
Or anything like
he
that.
He was never excessive,
Yeah, he was never kind of, kind of crazy, or
scandals to speak of.
Yeah, he was just kind of this guy, did his stuff, and got recognized, which is nice, too.
Oh, of course,
He also did in his 70s, he did a retreat to a Buddhist temple in Los Angeles, right?
He was, in 1998, ordained as a Renazi Buddhist monk.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He was pretty serious about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we were joking before the show that he was a Jewish man who went to Buddhism and wrote about Christian icons.
Yeah.
You know,
so he was very flexible.
Yeah.
Very flexible.
He was a very spiritual guy.
Shall we hear another tune?
Yes. What's the next one we're going to do? I think everybody knows.
This is my pick. 1988-ish, 1986, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And now, who is this, his version?
This is his version, right. But this is a co-write, Leonard Cohen, together with Sharon Robinson, who's a long, long-time collaborator.
Oh, right.
With him. She's
in his band, too.
Together.
Oh, right. The band Concrete Blonde. Concrete Blonde, if anyone of those remembering that band, they did a version of Everybody Knows.
Yes.
Which did a pretty good job.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
So let's take a list for this.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich, that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful, give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. And everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. And everybody knows that you live forever. Oh, when you've done a line or two. Everybody knows. Rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows you've been through, from the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody.
And that was Everybody Knows by Leonard Cohen on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Leonard Cohen and Sharon Robinson.
And Sharon Robinson on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. Yes, that's just a writer's credit. We don't talk about that.
Yes,
very because we're not talking about songwriting.
Yeah,
it's very important to know that Sharon Robinson wrote that, and I want to find out more about Sharon Robinson.
Well, that's a long song. That's like that's actually like six full verses.
Yeah, it's got a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff.
Well, the thing about Sharon Robinson, so I've always liked this song. I'm going to say always. I've been listening to Leonard Cohen songs for like 6 years, so that's what I mean by always. But this has always been one of my favorites, a lot because of the imagery and stuff like that, but just because I do like the production value of it. It's got, you know, it moves along. It's highly structured, I guess, because of the repetition of the Everybody Knows at the top and the bottom of each verse. It's got that separate chorus and everything. So, I mean, and, you know, that's something that's kind of always maybe bugged me about the folk tradition, is that the structure's a little bit looser. Mm-hmm. And I tend to prefer songs that are the structure's a little bit tighter. So anyway, that's the reason I like it. But the Sharon Robinson, I guess, is a little bit more musician, whereas Leonard Cohen, obviously, is the lyrics and poet, right?
Do you know about Sharon?
When we proposed doing this show, I did look up this song specifically and how it was
written. Can you tell us any stories?
Well, not really stories, but just in terms of the collaboration, Sharon Robinson really brought the musical bed.
She's like a bass player or something? Or?
I'm assuming she's
a
multi-instrumentalist, probably. I'm guessing piano-based, because what's really interesting here, like on the lyric sheet, and this is on the website as well, songtalk.ca, I did include the chords on this, and actually the recording is a semitone lower than what's shown here.
What key is it in?
It's in D minor.
Oh. Okay.
But so for the first few lines of the verse, he's just flipping back and forth, D minor, B flat, D minor, B flat, which is always in key. And then he goes to G minor, which is still in the key, but then he goes to A major, which you wouldn't normally, it's like completely out of key.
New key.
Right? Okay. He's almost switching keys. She's almost switching keys right in the middle of the song. And then he's throwing in an E flat major and a D minor.
That's Sharon?
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming it is. It creates this kind of musical loop. And then it finally ends up on the D minor again. Like, it sort of carries you through this little bit of a musical journey and then brings you back to square one.
Cool.
Yeah. Which is very cool. Which I'm not sure that Leonard Cohen would have done that on his own.
I don't know. When you listen to some of his early stuff, he actually had pretty complicated melodies. He was a really good chord progressions
that were that.
Well,
far.
He collaborated.
Well, and but the interesting thing too is that, I mean, for all the people that say Leonard Cohen can't sing, I mean, he stayed in that through all those chord changes. His melody was spot on.
Yeah,
right. I mean, right. Well, what I liked was it had the rhythm of a death march.
Yeah,
it was going shoom shoom shoom. Shoom, shoom, constantly, and it never gave up. You know, it was relentless, right? And it's so nihilistic. I mean, the dice are loaded, the good guys lost.
Yeah, it's so cynical. This was written 25 years ago.
Look at these references, and I'm just going to guess at these things. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, the dog just died, but we're looking at, done a line or two, cocaine, old Black Joe still picking cotton, a racism still going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that in the 80s, which of course was the outbreak of the AIDS epidemic, that might be a reference to the play. Because then he says, a naked man and woman, which is Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve, the innocence of sex is long gone.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a meteor on your bed, whatever that means, right?
I love... everybody knows that you've been faithful, and there were so many people that you had to meet without your clothes.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what drew me to this song, because I was going through my divorce when I first heard this.
Oh, wow.
It's like, this is speaking to me.
What's interesting, though, there's like, you have three full verses, and they're long verses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're great verses, but they're long verses.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the chorus, which is Everybody Knows, which is really actually simple.
Mm-hmm.
But he repeats...
He actually reads the chorus,
which is kind of strange because really he could have put a little bit of variation on one of those choruses, because they're just repeating. It's like everybody knows, that's how things go, everybody knows.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like the second line could have been a bit of a...
It could have been different the second time around.
A little bit of a change.
But there's no redemption, Phil. There's no redemption in the song. The last verse is, we're in trouble. We know what we've been through, from the bloody cross on Calvary, the crucifixion of Christ, to the folks on the beach at Malibu, you know, like, oh, who cares? We're wealthy. It's all coming apart. Take one last look at this Sacred Heart before it blows. Yeah. I mean, it's like totally nihilistic and yet so beautifully done. I'm just noticing our time. We got one more song.
We got one song
to go.
Yes, we. This is actually why we don't normally do three songs.
But tonight we're going to.
Yes, this one is off his last album, which actually sold out, which I guess is nice. It's a short album. It's called You Want It Darker. This one's called Leaving the Table, and his last album has only like 9 songs, and one of them is sort of a reprieve of the first song. Mm-hmm. I like the album in general. I thought it's kind of overproduced for me. I thought some of these things would have been nice if they were stripped down, because I think this was like his last statement. Mm-hmm. And I think I've heard he was sort of sick before this, but I don't really know. Mm. But so let's take a listen to Leaving the Table off of You Want It Darker.
I'm leaving the table. I'm out of the game. I don't know the people in your picture frame. If I ever loved you, oh no, no, it's a crying shame. If I ever loved you, if I knew your name, you don't need a lawyer. I'm not making a claim. You don't need to surrender. I'm not taking aim. I don't need a lover, no, no, no. The wretched beast is tame. I don't need a lover. So blow out the flame. There's nobody missing. There is no reward. Little by little, we're cutting the cord. We're spending the treasure, oh no, no, that love cannot afford. I know you can feel it, the sweetness restored. I don't need a reason for what I became. I've got these excuses, they're tired and lame. I don't need a pardon, no, 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 no. There's no one left to blame. I'm leaving the table. I'm out of the game. I'm leaving the table. I'm out of the game.
And that was Leaving the Table on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 in Toronto, and 12:80 a.m. actually,
yes,
in Toronto,
yes.
And yeah, that was Leaving the Table by Leonard Cohen on his, this is from his last album, You Want It Darker.
Yeah, it was only released like a month or two ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this is, I mean, I wonder, you know, this seems like he knew, well, I guess he realized like he's 70, so he's probably going to...
No, he was 82.
No, he was 82.
He was 82.
Yeah.
So and even in the title track, he's got a line in there like something like, Lord,
I'm ready.
Lord, I'm ready, something like that. Like,
yeah, you knew it was coming. But where this is like, you know, I'm leaving the table.
Yeah.
I'm out of the game. I mean, a lot of his other stuff, like the first track, You Want It Darker, was good. But a lot of the stuff was sort of so... kind of overproduced. This was kind of one of the more simple songs, and I liked it because it's I think it's a very personal song. I mean, he's really kind of summing up his life. I don't know, you know, the situation of his passing, but it certainly seems like this was his kind of
final statement. So,
yeah, you know, it's
last will and testament.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm leaving the table, I'm out of the game.
What I was thinking as I listened to it is that it's written in a waltz. It's a 3/4 time for something that's so somber and serious and departure. He put a very lighthearted rhythm behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to get depressed in a waltz, really, right? Because it was bum ch ch bum ch ch. Then towards the end, he started. I don't know if his piano came in, but there were some block chords there. I Don't Need a Reason.
Yeah.
That sounded almost like rock and roll, like 50s, 60s. Yeah. Clunk, clunk, clunk.
Well, I think it's a standard rock and roll, you know, chord progression.
Is it? Like, yeah, C, A, like, minor, F, G?
It's like 2-6-5.
There's a 6-4-5, maybe a 2 in there. Yeah.
I like the tune. I love the words again. You don't need a lawyer. I'm not making a claim.
Yeah.
You don't have to surrender. I'm not taking aim. So everybody just really relax, cool. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't need a lover. The wretched beast, I don't know if it's his sex drive, is tame.
Yeah.
It's time to blow out the flame. I'm not chasing girls anymore. Right?
Mm-hmm. That 82?
That's a cool way of saying it, you know? There's nobody missing, so there's no reward. We're cutting the cord. You know, and Sweetness Restored is lovely because there is a light note in that towards the end of the fourth verse there.
Yeah.
I know you could feel it, the sweetness restored.
And there's no chorus, you know?
Yeah.
It's just verse, you know? It's a pretty tight little song. I love that little thing he does at the end, you know, where he repeats the last two lines, it kind of does that little chord change. It's a minor thing, but I love that.
Slight lift,
at
the very end.
it's a little, you know, crafty thing, which is
a little turnaround.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I think it's pretty, I think it's well crafted.
It is very well crafted.
It's contained well within it. And it's got that kind of, all his songs, like they seem to have a kind of forward motion to them.
Yeah.
So they don't get boring. Like they, I don't know if they're just slightly ahead of the beat or what, but they seem to have this dun, 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 dun. They kind of keep moving, you know.
Well,
I'm thinking
previous,
of Berlin. Yeah. I'm thinking of Manhattan,
First Retake Manhattan.
I mean, the great tune, right? But it's got movement because with that voice and the simple structure, if it didn't move, it'd be dead.
That's true.
It would be dead.
Well, the song we had before had six verses. I mean, if someone came in normally and did six verses, you'd be going, okay, that's a long song, you know? That's hard to pull through.
Well,
but
which is all the crafty wordplay and everything.
Yeah,
handy,
you know.
Right? But
well,
if you look at
he's a master at it.
If you look at the language of Leaving the Table versus Bird on the Wire, like, it's clear he's got some versatility in him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, it's not that kind of old English style of Bird on the Wire. It's a little bit more straightforward.
Yeah.
In terms of his language.
He moved from poet to confessional. Poet here, and these images are my feelings, what I'm feeling, right?
Well, again,
I mean, that was too, but it's somehow less poetical and still really beautiful, right? The word craft.
Well, we had this discussion when we did our Bob Dylan show where it's pretty clear the line between poetry and lyric can be kind of blurry. Right?
Oh,
like,
of course.
You know, there's certain elements that make poetry and certain elements that make a song a song, you know, and there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, and I mean, I think good lyrics don't necessarily have to be good poetry, and good poetry doesn't have to be good lyrics.
Exactly.
You know,
it's always
a separate thing. But, it's such a personal song. in so many ways. And I wonder if he sort of knew.
Can I ask a question? We just got a couple minutes.
Yes.
And I was thinking, why don't we go around the room, three of us. What do you think Leonard Cohen's lasting legacy is to the world of music? And I'll start. I know I'm putting you on the spot a bit, but to me, the lasting legacy is the artistry of the lyric, the sustained artistry throughout an entire career of writing lyrics that mean something and move people. That's what I think.
I think that's it, too. I think one of the things is that he had a big personality, you know, even as a Buddhist monk. I mean, you know, and I think he did it quite honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not an affectation, but he had a huge talent and a huge personality, but somehow he never seemed overbearing. And I think that's kind of a quality which is really, really unusual. Like you see people who, I think some people are really, really talented, but they tend to be really overbearing and they're
egocentric.
And I don't know, he doesn't seem to be egocentric.
I've heard stories on the CBC. One person told a story about being at a party, and he was a young man at the time, and he was talking to Leonard Cohen after a concert, and a woman came in and tried to push herself into the conversation. She was overeager to get an autograph, and Leonard said, "Excuse me, ma'am, I'm talking to this gentleman here, and I'll get to you after."
Yeah. Wow.
And the man who was on the radio, the young man at the time, he said, "What a gentleman." And that's what I hear over and over about him, a real gentleman. Neil, for you?
Yeah, I'm not so much sure about legacy per se, but I think, like you guys are kind of saying, is that he was an artist that really stood up with integrity.
Yeah. Right?
And like you were saying earlier, Bruce, about Bob Dylan, and I think Leonard Cohen really comes across authentic. And he almost gives that kind of inspiration to even younger generations that they can really be. And this is kind of cliche to say, but you can be yourself, and you can be an artist that doesn't cave into commercialism necessarily or pop culture or anything like that.
And you don't have to be a brilliant singer to be a success.
I think one thing is that he was an artist all the way to the end. Like he never.
Yeah.
So I think some people start off as artists and then they wind up becoming entertainers.
Yeah.
And being
an
entertainer is a great thing and is a skill in itself.
Tom Jones.
Yeah, and a fantastic entertainer.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, like he was always an artist and he was always trying to do artistic things. And I think that's the time. Yes, I think I hear the band coming in. I guess they want to go home too, because that's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. And we'd like to thank our guest, Leonard Cohen. He was great.
As always.
Yes, really interesting show. Please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. And subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca as well. And you can find the links to all the products, books, and services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at the next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on this Sunday from 1 to 4 at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. And stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. And we'd like to thank CJRU 1280 for putting up with all our shenanigans. We'd like to thank Vanessa for manning the social media channels. Thank you, Vanessa.
Fabulous.
You rock as always. Fabulous. And of course, we'd like to thank Etan.
On the board.
For manning the board. And of course, we'd like to thank you, the home the home listener. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
MondoArt.
You can follow Bruce at
Bruce Harrod.
You can follow Vanessa at
Sunny_Vanessa.
And, of course, Etan.
@Tony_Orr.
And, of course, you can follow me at The Phil Emery. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse the past shows and find out how you can be a guest on our show. Please join us this time next week, and we're going to have another great show. Thanks so much for listening.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.